Our monthly theme is exploring consolation and desolation. It is a religious task to reflect on our lives, the times when we feel desolate, devastated, sad, scared, worried, unsure. How do we console ourselves? And who do we turn to for consolation, to feel relief, support, to feel held, seen, heard and valued? In some tradition, that answer is God, Yahweh, Allah, the goddess, Jesus, Vishnu, Krishna. In Unitarian Universalism, some of us would answer the same way. And some cannot quite relate or flat out deny those options. If turning to a divine entity doesn't console you, to whom or to what do you turn when you need comfort, care, support, reassurance? Some of us would say our spouse or our family, our friends. But what happens when most of those folks are in need of comfort too? Our furry or winged or finned companions or a being in nature can provide some comfort. But often, when things are really hard, we need more than that. Many of us have experienced that collective sorrow, anger, etc., since the election. Contrary to what some would say, those of us who are feeling that way aren't actually sore losers. We are simply and profoundly sad, angry, worried, terrified, nervous for what might be further attacked or destroyed of this country. And so are a lot of our friends. So how do we find consolation? This is why this congregation is so important right now. When lots of us are in despair, rather than withdrawing, which is what fear does, we must resist that and gather together to share our despair, to comfort one another, and then go back into the world to advocate for peace and kindness and compassion for more beings. We must sing no ordinary song. In every breath, compassion must be long, we sang earlier. We can come together in our sorrow, in our anger, in our despair, and engage in the spiritual practice of prayer for a better world, of meditation for our own hearts to be kinder, listening to that still small voice inside calling you on, and listening for the larger truth of our collective voices raised together so that every alleluia may bear a seed. April is National Poetry Month, and given the holy days of Palm Sunday today in the Christian tradition, and Passover, which begins tomorrow night in the Jewish tradition, it is fitting to consider the poems of resilience, how to overcome oppression of religious expression. We still have a long way to go, don't we, Egypt? To overcome the silencing of poets and artists and musicians and other people throughout history. Poems of resilience to resist that which seeks to destroy human wholeness and the earth. Poems of resilience to embody the power of love and to rise again. It can be hard to describe poetry. In The Lightest Touch, David White offers a description from the perspective of a poet. He references Lazarus, who in the Christian scriptures is in the Gospel of John, and rises from the dead when Jesus beckons him from his tomb. David writes, "Good poetry begins with the lightest touch, a breeze arriving from nowhere, a whispered healing arrival, a word in your ear, a settling into things. Then, like a hand in the dark, it arrests the whole body, steeling you for revelation. In the silence that follows a great line, you can feel Lazarus deep inside, even the laziest, most deathly afraid part of you, lift up his hands and walk toward the light." Poetry can resurrect us. That is, can lift us up, can help us rise again, can help us be resilient. As a lover of words, it can feel so satisfying to be wrapped in poetry. The selection of just the right word to rhyme or not, to fit the meter or not, to conform to a style or to branch out and create something hybridized or brand new. I started writing poetry when I was somewhere around 7 or 8, maybe 9 years old. I have a plain plastic blue binder filled with 3-hole ruled sheets of blue ink and much neater handwriting. Do you remember that commercial in the 70s about pollution? They show a river with a person in traditional Native American clothing, who, by the way, is not Native American, paddling a canoe with trash floating by and the smokestacks in the background, throwing their trash out the window on the side of the road. Do you remember it? The voiceover says, "Some people have a deep abiding respect for the natural beauty that once was this country, and some people don't. People start pollution. People can stop it." That commercial, along with the "Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute," and the Smokey the Bear public service announcements, had a lot of impact on me as a child. The first few poems in this binder certainly indicate that those PSAs worked. My younger self wrote this. "Paper. Where does it come from? Trees and such, but that isn't much. If we had no paper, where would we be? I wish more people would consider the tree." And there's another poem about birds slamming into smokestacks and how terrible pollution is. Now, no literary prizes would come with these poems, but that really isn't the point of poetry, after all, is it? The point, or at least a point, of poetry is to observe, to consider, to note the inside and the outsider, to wonder about the horse rider, and then veer into the untidier and go back to the wider view of words and how they dance or don't. Beetle, grasshopper, kernels of corn, or Cirque du Soleil, the gods and what we will or won't make of them, hey. Rhythm and rhyme, not always wedded to time, and yet strive to be all of it, can be poetry. Bob Stanley, the poet laureate of Sacramento, wrote a review of John's poetry book. He said, "Bowman finds unexpected ways into poems, but they always remain true to who he is. He tells us to leave softness behind, but he can't, of course. His poems caress the world the way poems we love do. These poems give us something to celebrate, a fire to huddle around and warm our feet, a world where people matter." When times are hard, and they certainly are hard, doesn't that sound like a place to be huddling around the fire, sharing both the quiet and the words that weave images of all that matters? From Emily Dickinson to Tupac Shakur, poetry has helped many human beings, feel more resilient.
As a young adult, I worked in recreation, running summer day camps for elementary school kids and middle school activities and trips. One of the guiding principles in recreation is to transition activities when the energy is high. Don't wait until interest has faded, until minds and bodies have wandered off to distraction or to boredom. Keep momentum going by changing to what is next when energy is up. It is partly with this practice in mind that we have announced our resignation, effective in July. Particularly since the election, the need for community that affirms all people, that promotes democratic process, that honors the interdependent web of existence has increased. The energy here is high. So transitioning to what is next is good timing for SFUU's continued growth. When we are faithful to our values, so much good can happen. In the last 7 years, we have been witness to many of your journeys of struggle, of loss, of healing, of becoming, of transformation. We have witnessed courageous self-reflection, allowing for more honesty in relationships. We've witnessed some of you choosing to use your voices in new ways, speaking up and speaking out and showing up. We've been humbled and honored to be invited into the most heartbreaking, the losses, the changes, the deaths, and also the heart-opening experiences of your lives, the holy unions, the weddings, the child dedications, the deeper insights, and the healing times. As your ministers, we have been witness to spiritual journeys of times when you found or lost faith, when you grappled with big questions, when you gently made spaces for souls to heal, times when you chose again and again to bless the world. We've also been changed by our time with you, and for that we are so very grateful. Last month, during the stewardship campaign, many of us in worship and at a special event at St. Luke's up the street heard how this congregation has changed people's lives for the better. By creating a space of welcome and inclusivity, by caring for one another in times of need, and by showing up in the larger community. Please keep doing these vital things. When we were first learning about SFUU, we heard the part of the congregation story that was, because you were smaller and only offering a part-time position, you could attract ministers, but that no one would stay very long. Well, that story has changed. This congregation is moving from pastoral to program size, that is, from small to mid-size. That 2010 congregation committed to full-time ministry on faith. You invited us to accompany your journey of faith. And now you have had ministers serve full-time for 7 years. The length of a first ministry averages 3 to 5 years. And the average for a Unitarian Universalist minister is 5 to 7 years. This was our first settled ministry, and we were this congregation's first full-time, long-term ministers. What an adventure it has been. And now it's time for us to navigate a transition. Transitions in our lives bring change, and sometimes change brings loss. Many of you are familiar with the work of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who shared stages of grief. These stages aren't linear, of course. They're just part of a constant, circular, moving continuum. When we experience loss, we visit these stages, each in our own way, in our own time. And then we might revisit any of the stages, or maybe it's that the stages revisit us as time passes. We may experience denial or anger, perhaps bargaining, depression, or acceptance. Our wider culture is often uncomfortable with sadness. We've been conditioned to rush in to comfort, to try to say the right thing or do something that will help someone feel better. Don't worry, it'll be okay. This transition is one of those both and kind of times. We are leaving, and we trust that you will be okay. Right now, some of us are sad, some are relieved, some have mixed feelings, some are anxious about what it means, some are angry. And it's okay to be right where you are. We can allow time and space for the various stages to rage or wander or tiptoe through.
Ministry is a strange calling. This something happens in your life and you say, yes, I will serve. I will go to seminary. Upheaval in my life. Lots of student loan debt. Yes, I will serve. It is mysterious. It is powerful. And often undeniable. As the path unfolds and as we make the choice to move to another congregation, it is not because of anything wrong here. It's because we've answered the call to serve, and we must answer. In my internship training, my supervising minister told me, as I prepared to assist with a memorial service, that every goodbye is practice for our final goodbye. A lot of us avoid the feelings, the endings. They're sad or angry or hard. They can be awkward. They can also be powerful and beautiful in their own way. We have done so much good work together. Whether you have been here longer than us or just new today, we have already done so much good work together. And we really hope we have a good goodbye with you. And that will take all of us. From now until we leave, we are becoming aware of the lasts. And the potentials for lasts. Is this the last time? Is this not the last time? The last time that we'll see something at the State Theater. The last time we hike in the American River Canyon. The last Brood Awakenings or Theologies on Tap. The last edits to an e-beacon. A last worship service here on July 9th. Our last hugs with you. It isn't easy, but it is important, a spiritual work. And we ask ever so humbly that you engage in it with us. Don't pull away. Let's make the most of the time that we have together. Let us work hard. Let us celebrate abundantly. Let us share the truth with compassion. And let's let our love flow. Our dear colleague, Alicia Ford, shares these words in Voices from the Margins, a book of meditation published by our UU publishing house, Skinner Books. Her poem is called Love Abundant. Thank you. I lift my eyes up to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from love abundant. My help comes from the hills. My help, it comes from ancient mothers whose hearts beat in mine. It comes from the trees that sway and the breeze that sways them. My help comes from all that was and is and will ever be. I lift my eyes, hushed by the soothing touch of waves caressing wounded shores, wounded souls. I lift my eyes to the horizon bathed by the hum of mothers and mothers' mothers cradling, gently rocking. I lift my voice, call of the sea, trees, sister, moon, mother, earth. My soul weeping, a symphony of life overflowing, I give myself. I too hum through every pore with every breath. I give myself an extension of all that is, was, and ever will be. The story we have created together matters, even as it is changing. It still matters. The next few months is just as important as the time we've already spent together. There is more good we can do together to become the beloved community that respects diversities as we nourish the spirit, care for the earth, and inspire faithful acts of peace and justice. We are so grateful for all the good we have created together. We have loved each other into being who and what we are today. Love is one of your superpowers. And love is one of our superpowers. And love is a superpower all on its own. May we love one another through this transition. May we harness love's power to end oppression in this congregation, denomination, community, and wider world. May we all make space in our hearts for whomever comes next on our spiritual paths. I love you.
May we expand love's presence in the wide universe that we all travel on this beautiful blue-green earth. May it be so. Amen. And blessed be.